KFW, Washington.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with Terry Kester of WPFW 89.3 FM, and hopefully, I believe Mark Levine is with us. If not in physical form, then I think his voice is going to be here over the phone.
I'm here.
Oh, great, great.
Wait a minute. Is that Mark?
I exist.
You exist in Las Vegas? Put a nickel in for me.
Okay, Mark. Well, we've got a great subject tonight, and. Oh, but first, the important thing. Every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m., Mark and Terry and myself are here on 89.3 FM. Make sure you tell your friends if you really enjoy the show. And everyone can call in. I'm going to give out the number in a moment. And here is the subject of the night. What role does... I was going to say, does it? What role does race play in the right-wing attacks on President Obama? What role does race play? Is it all about race? Is it partially about race? Is it mixed? We've got certainly the far right playing the race card on a daily basis. We have Glenn Beck making statements that President Obama has a deep-seated hatred for white people, which is, reductio ad absurdium. It's absurd because he was raised by white grandparents and he's half white. It's absurd. But we know that was a tool. It wasn't about reality. We've got people keeping children home today because they don't want their children to go to school and hear the president tell them to wash their hands so they won't get swine flu and, things. I guess they're the anti-hand-washing lobby or whatever. But, again, it's so absurd that can't possibly be it. And another thing, but I'm going to get the we're going to give the number out, 202-588-0893. I'm going to finish up and let Mark and Terry get in and
ready.
Hopefully some callers. But last thing, I watch a lot of these different rallies, and I see one thing that's rather continuous, and that's people getting on there, these angry people saying, one lady was crying, I want my country back. Another person, this is not the country I grew up in. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm African-American, and I'm kind of glad it's not the country that you grew up in, because back then wasn't all that thrilling for me, I'm thinking, who couldn't see this
Good
coming?
Good point.
They couldn't see this coming? I mean, all men are created equal. Where did you think that was going to go?
Yeah. All right.
Terry.
Yeah, this is Terry D. Kester here, and Garland, it's a pleasure to be with you, and Mark, glad you could join us. This is a bigger issue than just race, unfortunately.
There's a bigger issue than race in this country.
There's a bigger issue than race. Yes, there is. I mean, one issue that's bigger is stupidity. You can't do a damn thing about stupidity. Maybe you can do something about racial issues. I'm not sure. I hope so, anyway. But what's really happening here besides the race, or what's igniting the racial issue, what's igniting people like Glenn Beck, is when a society is fragmented, when a society is falling apart, which I think the society is in numerous ways, or at least it's being scared to think it is. When that tension develops, people unfortunately go back to more primitive, more disgusting, more inane, more frightened reactions. And I mean, this is true of on any ethnic side at all. I mean, you can see this, all around the world this has happened. I mean, particularly in Bosnia, etc., when you saw all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's a country that basically was relatively unified. They start to divide. They start to fragment. Suddenly it becomes racial. It becomes ethnic. It becomes incredibly ugly, pointing out that the roots don't go away. The roots of racism, et cetera, for most people, unfortunately, do not go away. And once we get to this fragmented level, people start to sing that ugly song. And I don't know what the antidote is. I wish I could find the antidote, because it's disgusting, it's wrong, it's narrow, it's racist. What more can you say?
I don't know what more you can say, but I think Mark does. Mark.
Okay.
Well, I guarantee Mark has something
to say.
I'm going
to answer your question, Garland, I guess by saying yes and no. Are there racists out there that oppose Obama because they're racist? Absolutely. There's no question about it. But I also think there are people who oppose him for the same reason that the right wing opposed Clinton. Look, if you look at the birther movement, all right, the people that think that Obama wasn't born here, The easiest way to describe them is mentally ill. That's probably the nicest
stupid,
way
stupid works.
Them. But I think that those people are genuinely racist. They sort of can't conceive of the fact that a child of a Kenyan father and a white American mother could be president of the United States. So they believe fantastical theories and things like that. The parents that don't want their kids to listen to Obama telling them to stay in school, I think those are pretty fairly put in the racist bank, along with those that, that Glenn Beck is trying to stir up with his crazy racist ideas, or the ones that call him Nazi or things like that. But I also think that there's a larger group of people who are a little bit less crazy. They're still crazy, but they're not necessarily racist. They're just opposed to any Democratic Party liberal/progressive agenda. And these are the people that are going around saying Obama's going to kill your grandma and death panels and ridiculous stuff like that, which is not racist per se, but just a vicious lie about the Obama health care plan. And let's remember that these same people took down Bill Clinton, not because they were racist. You know, Clinton may have been called the first black president by Toni Morrison, but he was a white guy. But they took him down and they made a huge deal over his dalliance with Monica Lewinsky because they just don't like liberal policies. And that, I think, is probably two-thirds of the crazies, if I had to quantify it, while a good one-third are the racists.
Well, it looks like we've got some callers coming up. Once again, what role does race play in the right-wing attacks on President Obama? 202-588-0893. We've got Sheba online, too. Sheba, what role? I'm totally confused. I'm mystified. Can you put me paid here on this?
You know, I'm disgusted. It infuriates me. It really does. We need to give these people the Dixie Chick treatment, just as they were the same ones during the Bush administration, calling everyone who was against Bush, who went against anything he said, un-American. We need to give them the same treatment, and we also need to stop giving them so much publicity.
What do you mean give them
too much publicity in the media? I'm sorry?
What do you mean, Sheba, give them the Dixie Chick treatment?
Just how everyone was against the Dixie Chicks and were threatening them for them speaking out and vocalizing their disappointment in President Bush and his actions, and how, you know, they're un-American and they were boycotting the Dixie Chicks and their concerts and their music. I think we need to say that to these people who are going against President Obama, pulling their children out of school. You're making your child miss a whole day of school for a 20-minute speech that will benefit them.
You mean to use the same tactics that were used against the Dixie Chicks? Isn't that sort of the antithesis?
Maybe not necessarily that extreme, but I think that we need to call a spade a spade.
If
people were un-American for not supporting Bush, then you are un-American for not supporting President Obama.
Right. Well,
I think the caller is absolutely right. And I want to distinguish between those that are un-American and those that are not. It is perfectly American and justified in democracy to disagree with President Obama's proposals, to have voted for John McCain, to have lost the election, and to, be upset with Obama's proposals. That's American. That's not un-American. That's democracy, just as I was in the loyal opposition to George W. Bush. Where people become un-American is when they start coming up with these fantastical lies, mostly spread by Glenn Beck and the Fox Propaganda Channel, things like Obama wasn't born in the United States, or he's trying to kill grandma. The crazy stuff, I agree with the caller, they are un-American, and they should be ostracized like the Dixie Chicks.
Well,
but I don't think we should ostracize people merely for disagreeing with the president.
Well, let me say this, and we got another caller, but as I said, 202-588-0893. My problem is this. I got to disagree with you on one thing, Mark, and the caller. Unfortunately, it's very American. It's all too American. You know, America does have a history that says that is not outside. Luckily now, it's becoming somewhat outside, a bit outside of the mainstream. But the one thing you can't call people like that is un-American, unfortunately, because of America's history. June on line three. What's the story here? What's the problem? How much does race play in the attacks on President Obama?
Race play a great role in the attack on Obama, and I feel that it is to frighten the white Americans more so than to put fear in other people.
Excellent point.
It appears they are trying to do, stir them up so they can react and come out in an evil way, and also to frighten them from going to the polls to vote for another Democrat.
Yeah,
so you have to look at it from all angles. You cannot be tunnel vision and look at this issue because it has a lot of tentacles to it. And we've got to analyze this and fight back.
That's an excellent point. Let me say this. Traditionally, in my humble opinion, racism in this country has been a lot about politics and this. I think to the super wealthy in a Republican Party, they could care less about race. But racism works very well to get people down there at the bottom to struggle and fight and angry and follow them and vote against their very own social and financial needs.
That's their technique. That's the wealthy's technique.
Well, it's not just the wealthy. But June has a very good point. I mean, it is a tactic as well. And, you know, to dismiss, we can't, yes, there's racism involved, and I'm not dismissing that at all. But we've got to understand that it is a political tactic, and we need to denounce it for that reason, which is maybe what the previous caller, Sheba, was saying as well. That it's, you know, Glenn Beck may or may not be a racist. Glenn Beck may or may not, you know, believe in racism or have his racial prejudice or not, but he's using it as a tactic to scare people, to divide people. And at the very least, we've got to realize and denounce that as well. It's a tactic, and it's a disgusting tactic.
Well, and the sad part of it is there is a certain group of people in this country which it works.
Always.
It works very, very well. And again, she made a good point about people, about scaring people, because the right all along has tried to say, this guy is some kind of a black militant. They tried to paint stereotypes, figuring we can scare white people into voting against him.
And we've got to realize it's the same thing. I mean, if people want to do the same thing about Jews, they'll do the same thing about Jews. They'll do the same thing about, you know, any group. You know, demonize them is a tactic. Demonizing people is a tactic. And those who have any position, like people like Glenn Beck, those are the people, frankly, we need to go after. And those are the people we need to say, look, we know what you're doing.
Mark, I got a question. Do you think, and here's one of my concerns, but do you think the media's coverage of the issues, legitimizing some of the things that some of the absurd claims that are made, do you think that kind of plays along with this? I mean, in my opinion, it does. What do you think about how the media is dealing with and reacting to the really absurd claims that are made against the president?
Well, of course, there's more than one media. The Fox Propaganda Channel is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. Their job is to make Obama fail. There's a reason why they put Glenn Beck up there. Glenn Beck, ironically, a year and a half ago, complained about the health care he was getting in America.
Right.
Today he says it's the best health care in the world. The difference is a year and a half ago he was on CNN. Today he's on Fox Propaganda Channel. So he's a puppet. He's a puppet of masters that are trying to do exactly what Terry and you said, and the caller said, to divide and conquer. The other media, the more legitimate media, CNN or New York Times or Washington Post, they're sort of damned if they do, damned if they don't, if they ignore these stories. And only Fox carries them, then people might believe that the lies are true, that Obama's really trying to kill grandma. I think the responsible media has to mention the stories, mention the craziness, but clearly refute it and let people know that these crazy people really are crazy. I don't think they can just hide under a rock and pretend these people don't exist, because they got to refute those crazy theories.
Terry, one question, and that is, there's another issue within this, and that is the issue of violence. We have continually, from a while back, I'm sure you remember Michelle Bachmann and some of the various people on the right making statements indicating that they favored violent activity, revolution, things of that nature. And now we've seen it progress to people coming to a healthcare. Clearly, this is not about healthcare. Coming to a healthcare town hall meeting, wearing a gun, the signs that say the blood of liberty. You know what I mean?
Fascist signs that
basically say somebody ought to be shot. Let's call it like it is. So we've got this stuff going on. We've got is it possible that these people are actually kind of fomenting? They know they got nutcases out there. Are they trying to make something the worst thing happen?
Of course they are. I mean, this is an inherently violent country. I mean, and that's not just a cliche or a liberal cliche. It is a fact, and it has been a violent country, and violence has ruled in this country for a long, long time. Now, we have some quiet periods, and we make some progress. We stop lynching people occasionally, you know. For a little while. But there is that natural gut reaction that's being fed, and I fear that a lot. And again, you know, this is where we need to focus our denunciation. I mean, why any Republican, responsible Republican, is not condemning this kind of activity. The hell with NRA and the hell with the Second Amendment. Carrying a gun or an assault weapon, you know, to a political rally of any kind is a huge, provocative, dangerous statement. And any responsible politician should be called upon to, how dare you not denounce that? It's insane not to, because it will feed violence, and it scares the hell out of me. And we've got to call people to their responsibility.
202-588-0893. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry Kester. Mark,
Terry D. Kester.
Terry
Don't D. leave
Kester,
out the D.
The D, I mean, is for
there's
doctor,
a rhythm here. Doctor of democracy. Thank you.
Mark, what's your thought on all these violence issues?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's intended to be provocative. It's got nothing to do with health care. It is people trying to assert that they can carry their guns everywhere and, frankly, trying to stifle debate, because it's very hard to argue with a man with a gun on his hip. I know. I've done it. I've tried to have a discussion.
Well, you're a better man than me, buddy.
Said, you know what? I'm just not going to argue with the guy, because he may pull out his gun and shoot me, and I like winning an argument, but it's not worth it that much. You're absolutely right. Responsible Republicans need to call these people down, and I think Democrats need to call on Republicans to do so.
Amen.
You know, when Obama had the Reverend Wright controversy come up, Republicans and Democrats called on him to distance himself from Reverend Wright. It's time for Republicans and Democrats to call on Republicans to distance themselves from these crazy people. And if they don't, well, then let the whole country see they're in league with the crazies.
We got Martha on line three. Martha, welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM.
Thank you. I think the Democrats are spineless. They're not going to stand up to the Republicans, no matter what they say. They're so busy trying to appease them. But my thought is that I think it's a convergence of all these different entities. You've got the people that are, Obama said it best during the campaign. He said power never concedes. So these people who are in power, who are in control of resources, making decisions at the table, do not want to hear a Barack Obama come on national, on the national stage talking about distributing resources in a fair, progressive way. So yes, they will use the people that don't want to see a black man in power to foment trouble.
Are you going so far as to say that you think at this point that Obama is spineless?
That Obama's what? No. I'm talking about the Democrats. Sorry, I'm not being clear. The Democrats in the Senate, they are spineless. But in general, Democrats never stand up. You hear the Republicans, and I'm sorry if my thoughts sound erratic, but you hear the Republicans. They're so good at communications. They're so good at articulating their messages that the Democrats are not. They just go on and on and on without a central message. But again, I think it's all about power and resources. Who has it? And the fear that somebody else is going to take it away from the people who are in power.
Boy, I sure agree with you there. And all we got to look at, besides all these issues, is what's happening at the Supreme Court tomorrow. Pay attention to that. That is crucial in terms of this power struggle.
Well, I'll say this: the Republicans—they're good at the ad hominem character attacks and changing
emotions.
The issues
they play
and
to emotions.
And all that. The one thing they're really bad at is governing the country. Hey, let's go to Grant. Let's go to Grant on line three. Grant.
Hi.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Jerry.
You're listening to listening to the Raucous Caucus.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Two comments. One is Glenn Beck. He's been reported to the Homeland Security FBI tip-off as a potential terrorist. I did it earlier today. I said he's a potential terrorist and he should be dealt with as such.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we'll see it comes with.
Interesting approach, that. Grant.
And then the other issue is the biggest problem is we have a majority in the House and in the Senate. We have the executive branch, and yet we're soft-stepping it for the Republicans. And the political spectrum, whether they're in the minority or the majority, the conservatives have been dragging what's considered moderate far, far, far to the right of most other, social democracies in the world and developed nations for that matter, the public health care, the fact that people can even call it a socialist plan when it's been written to be friendly to the insurance companies by dropping the public single-payer option? I mean, it's just preposterous.
Thank you very much. Great, great points. We don't want to get sidetracked, but you made some great points.
And thanks for your phone call to the Homeland Security.
That's right.
Call about Rush Limbaugh, too, would you please?
We've got some more calls on. But first, Mark, he made a mention. You and I think, agree on this. He made a mention about our so-called majority in Congress, and we always talk about, well, it is a majority, but is it an effective majority? Maybe you can clarify, being an expert on that subject, what it means that we have a so-called majority in Congress right now.
Well, certainly. I think we have clear, effective control of the House. I think Nancy Pelosi is doing a terrific job. She's defending the public option. We don't have to worry about the House. Mm-hmm. In the Senate, as the caller pointed out, it's a different story. Today, filibusters have become common. What was once an extremely rare thing used once or twice a year, the Republicans do with every bill. They filibuster everything. They won't let a post office be named without bringing up a filibuster. And that's extraordinary, and they're doing it. So the question is, can we get 60 votes? And to get 60 votes, right now, after Ted Kennedy died, we don't even have 60 votes. As it happens, we only have 59. We're going to have a Republican on board. But there is a way out. There is an escape clause, and it's hidden in the depths of those of us that follow Senate regulations. And it's called the Reconciliation Plan, which sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook. But the heart of what that means is that they only need 50 votes, not 60, 50, of course, plus Vice President Joe Biden to cast deciding votes, although there's only 99 senators, so I guess you won't need to. But in any case, reconciliation is the threat that may make health care come through. If we can't get 60, we'll take 50. Now, there's certain things you can't do with reconciliation. You can't do quite as comprehensive a plan as the 60-vote plan would give. But it's enough, I think, to scare Republicans that despite the fact that they yelled and screamed all August, I still think health care reform's got that.
Let me ask a question, though, in terms of that. You say filibuster. Now, as far as I know, there actually haven't been filibusters because every time the Democrats simply back down. What would happen? I mean, you know, yes, they threaten a filibuster each time. You know, I say let them filibuster. Let them make bloody asses of themselves standing up, you know, blathering for a couple of months. You know, and to the point, obviously, when it's happened in the past, the public has gotten very tired, very unimpressed with filibusters. Why don't the Democrats say, fine, go ahead and talk your gums off?
Right, they don't even make them procedurally go through it.
It used to be that a filibuster really was, they have to keep talking and talking and talking to prevent a vote on the subject.
Right.
And then around about 10 years ago or so, they said, well, if you simply threaten a filibuster, we'll assume we need 60 and move on. But the Democrats, you're absolutely right, Terry, have the option of forcing them to mount an actual filibuster and make them look like idiots. And, you know, I say try it, although there's some that would say, well, maybe people would actually listen to them.
Let's,
I don't know.
But let's get back to our callers. Let's get back. We got some callers here. 202-588-0893. What role does race play in the right-wing attacks on President Obama? Tesfa, welcome to WPFW.
To me, the problem is selfishness and hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
Selfishness because we only want ourselves in power or somebody we are very familiar with or related to in power. We don't want the other guy who is also a citizen, who is also as educated, as experienced as myself, but somebody like I'm very close to. We are so selfish. We don't want the other guy. We want our own guy. And hypocrisy, we say we are Christian. In Christianity, everybody is created in the image of God. And everybody has the breath of God. And since we are supposed to, as Christians, respect God, we should also respect His creation. But we don't respect His creation. We don't respect His breath. We say we are Christians, but we're not. So this is here is the hypocrisy. We are used to live in a certain way. We only want certain people in our neighborhood. We only want certain people in official positions. We only want to leave somebody we are familiar with next to us. We don't want the other person. Here comes in racism.
Well, I think you make a very good point here, and that is there is an issue of aristocracy. Similar now, when Bill Clinton was in, I personally felt part of the problem was with the right was he didn't come from the right side of the tracks. He was a guy that, you know, he was from the wrong social class, and I always felt that was one of their issues against him. Of course, with President
not
Obama,
sure I'd agree with that. I mean, a Rhodes Scholar. I mean, for heaven's sake,
no,
he, you
yes,
know,
but he was not born. He didn't go to Andover
hey,
and all that
few
stuff.
Of us, very
Right.
Few
he was
born
not born on the
scholar,
right side of the
know?
Tracks, okay? Hey, but of course, there's a whole different issue with President Obama. Jim has been waiting so patiently. Thank you, Jim, and welcome to 89.3. Uh-oh. Jim might have spoken a bit too soon there. Jim, are you with us?
I'm there.
All right. Okay. There you go. Okay. I knew you were hanging in. Welcome to
WPFW. My comment is, I don't understand why the Democrats don't marshal the troops like the Republicans did when they had the House and Congress and president and got everybody in line and pushed everything through.
Well, I think there's two reasons.
Right now, it's the bipartisan stuff is like ridiculous.
I think there's two things. One, I think the Democrats are starting to realize that's what they have to do. If you saw President Obama on Labor Day deliver a really rousing speech in front of an audience in Ohio, you could see that the administration now realizes that the campaign isn't over. It's the kind of thing, frankly, maybe he was listening to Dialogue last week because it was exactly the advice we gave him last week that, the campaign didn't end in November 2008. He's got to marshal the troops, the exact same troops that got him elected, to defend his health care proposal, and I saw him starting to do that Labor Day. But I think the other thing, and why it's more difficult, is frankly Democrats are not as much of one mind as Republicans. As Will Rogers said, I don't belong to any organized party. I'm a Democrat. Two Democrats usually have three opinions. We don't always agree with each other. Among ourselves, there's people like me that think that without the public option, this whole thing is worthless. There are Democrats that say, well, no, anything's better than nothing. We don't always agree amongst ourselves. And so it's very hard to have a continuous push.
But we all agree on a single-payer option. I mean, come on. That's got to be the bottom line.
We don't all agree on that.
Not all Democrats, no. But let me ask, Mark, I know the Republican Party, if you want to run for office, requires that you, basically are loyal to the party. Doesn't the Democratic Party also require that?
Sure, but loyalty to the party means a lot of different things.
No, but I mean, really will support whatever the party says to support.
Well, I hate to stop this great conversation, but we're going to a public service announcement.
Oh, come on.
We'll be back.
What public? What service?
We want our callers to hold on, and we're going to get some more people
on
here.
Okay, if we have to.
Here is a statement from local station board candidate Mark E. Baker.
Hello, I am Mark E. Baker, and I want you to vote for me in the current election for the WPFW local station board. Together, our community will develop a greater level of activism and be a powerful voice demanding justice and equal treatment for all. Likewise, educational access and attainment is critical to our well-being. At WPFW, we have the ability and the mandate to use broadcast technology to deliver educational content to everyone in our listening audience. Learning doesn't just happen in a school building, and our technology can bring knowledge and uplift to the masses. Listeners to WPFW should be at the forefront of shaping and informing the future of our rapidly developing global network. We have the intelligence, the resources, and the technology to shape the future and demand current accountability from our leaders. As your representative on the local station board, Mark E. Baker will work to fully utilize our resources to assure self-determination, justice, and enrichment for the WPFW community. Vote for Mark E. Baker.
And that was a statement from local station board candidate Mark E. Baker.
Welcome back to Dialogue. My name is Garland Nixon, and I am here every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. with my friends Terry D. Kester and the D's for Doctor of Democracy.
Thank you.
And Mark Levine. And we actually rotate who hosts the show each week. If you want to be a part of our show tonight, call 202-588-0893. We welcome people, we want various alternative opinions. 202-588-0893. What role does race play in the right wing attacks on President Barack Obama? And I think Gabriel has the answer. Gabriel.
Yes, racism plays a big role. The Republican Party, I'm sorry to say this, but it has become a hideout for racists.
I don't think they're hiding.
they think the beneficiaries of this healthcare system are blacks. That's what they think. But most beneficiaries are all races. And I hate to say this, Republicans have become racist.
I
think Gabriel has a really good point. I think that this is connected with the reason why people oppose healthcare insurance reform. I think the major reason why a lot of people oppose it is because they don't want uninsured people to get coverage, because they think, why should I pay for some poor person to get coverage? They really don't believe that all men and women are created equal. Most people who are against health care insurance reform cannot abide by the idea that someone gets coverage when they're sick, even if they can't afford to pay for it. And there are lots of people that picture, as Gabriel points out, that picture the poor people as black. And so they use racism. It's actually more of an anti-poverty thing, but the face of that is often, for many races, why it's a black person.
And it's not just that. I mean, you make a good point, but I have encountered, unfortunately, a lot of right-wing people who tie the immigration issue into the health care issue, into Obama.
As well.
And
right.
they are really angry. I mean, it's shameful. It's frankly shameful. But these racists, are really angry at the idea that, you know, immigrants, Mexicans, Latinos, Hispanics, Ecuadorians, whomever, should get, you know, health care or any other benefit in our society. And it's purely racist. It's nothing to do with economics. It's nothing to do with crossing the border. It is as racist as anything I've seen.
And it's a ridiculous...
You know what's ironic, Terry? Yeah. In Mexico, they have universal health care.
Yes.
The poorest Mexican peasant can go into a clinic and get care in Mexico. Now, Mexico is a very poor country. It may not be such good care, but they provide it to every citizen. They do more in Mexico than we do in the United States.
And I have known many Americans who actually, in terms of cancer treatment, have gone to Mexico to get that treatment because they can get better and more treatments cheaper than they can in the United States.
And in fact, Costa Rica also has free health care.
Yes.
I think the point is well made, and that is there's a lot of race here, and it goes back, and I always blame this guy, it goes back to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, in my opinion, started it with that whole welfare queen crap. He started this story about some welfare queen in Chicago with 8 or 9 kids that was getting all this money and getting over on the system. And it was proven, and there was an article in the newspaper documenting why that story was completely untrue. And he kept saying it anyway.
Even though the story was untrue, there are always going to be people that defraud the system. There are poor people, yes, that defraud the system. There are also rich people that defraud the system. Look at all the Wall Street bailouts and Bernie Madoff that stole billions. The irony is that the welfare queen might steal a few hundred or thousand dollars that she shouldn't steal, but that pales in comparison to the rich people that defraud the system out of billions. You can't hold everyone responsible for the acts of a few miscreants.
No, and I think it's important, to keep this sort of focused on the racist issue, and it's not just Republicans. And by that, I mean, you know, we have to remember historically that it primarily was the Democratic Party, the Southern Democratic Party, and, I hate to label the whole South, but the Southern Democratic Party that resisted civil rights. And it was the Republicans that actually were pushing in a lot of ways for civil rights back then. So, but in order to maintain power or to regain power, the Republicans went to the Southern base, started playing the race card. The Democrats either changed or were just pushed out. So now it's become the Republicans that have been the race card pushers. And, you know, it's fascinating to see that the political spectrum shifted merely to preserve the racist technique
tactic. On that, to comment on, once again, if you want to be a part of this conversation, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Let me say this, Terry, on what you just said, I got to kind of disagree with you. I don't think anything changed in that. The only thing that changed were the labels. Right now, the Democrats and the Republicans could change names. That wouldn't mean that anybody changed. The people in the South who opposed the civil rights are the same people. The only thing that happened was at some point, when the Civil Rights Act was signed, Lyndon Johnson said, there goes the South. The people
who decided to employ the Southern strategy.
Right.
So both Johnson and Nixon knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah, no,
the only thing that happened was the racists switched parties.
That's
because
what I'm
saying. The Democratic Party didn't appear, was a little too far to the left for them, and it was a little too progressive with African Americans. So these are the same people. They just changed
names. That's what I'm saying.
All too often labels are you don't get the job done. They're very confusing.
No, you and I are in total agreement. We're not disagreeing at all. I'm saying exactly the same thing, and that's why we have to keep the focus on the racism issue, because it will switch parties.
Yeah.
The racist issue will stay with the same people and the same shouts and the same tactics.
RG, welcome to WPFW.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey. How you doing? Hello.
All right, how are you doing?
We're doing great.
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on the subject. I thought that there's a possible another dimension to looking at it, whether or not race plays into this attack on the president. Earlier, I think between you and Terry and Garland and Mr. Levine, that
Mark,
Mark, that. The difference of how people look at the fact rich people or corporate entities get quote-unquote welfare is the fact that they have a distributive vestiture, if you will, in the lives and in the body politic and in the economic framework of the country, as opposed to an individual that is only receiving on the receiving end. And so I don't think that the barometer that's used to make that comparison will ever be equitable, unfortunately, although it's certainly, it has a lot of weight to it. On the other hand, I think that with the regard to certainly when you're rating as low as the Republicans have in recent years, considering the Bush administration and Republican politics and all the way up to Governor Sanford in South Carolina, et cetera, scandal and so forth, that I guess they'll grab at straws to try to regain some of those lost points.
Yes, and the other thing is they know something that's worked in the past. You know, there's always two issues here. One of the issues is socioeconomic class, and the other issue is race. And they try to, as I was saying about the whole Reagan thing, the welfare queen had nothing to do with welfare and everything to do about saying, look, this issue, when I say welfare, it means race. Don't forget that. And the black people are lazy. They're getting over on us, and they're getting all these things free. Because, of course, we all know they're labeled because they're lazy, because that's what the stereotype says. Nick, welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM.
Hey, I just want to kind of comment on the last guy that was talking with the – he was long-winded with the accent, but I understood what he was trying to say about Christians. The Republicans will always stand up when they need your vote or they need something from you, and they'll say – they'll hold the Bible in their hand and they'll say Christian values and we're based on Christianity. And that when they get in office, they'll run poor people through the ringers and throw them to the wolves. Or when they don't get what they want, they'll come up racist. You know, I mean, how many times are they going to play the Christian card to get what they want? And then when they get what they want, they turn on them. So when they don't get what they want, they act worse. I mean, when are we going to get wise to this?
Good question. And that's one of my questions, too, to all of us. You know, is how do we change this pattern? Because there is a misuse of religion in it. There is the economic thing, which cannot be separated, because what they play on is the fears of the less people who are less financially secure. And that's, you know, an easy way to slide that into racism. Well, this person's going to get the job and you're not going to get the job,
right?
You know, whether it's in terms of immigration or whether it's in terms of African Americans. So my question, you know, to all of us and Garland, too, you know, how do we get past this at all? I mean, that's what really concerns me. We're stuck in this terrible, terrible pattern that we've been in many times.
202-588-0893. Mark.
I think the caller actually gives us a way to get past this. And I think bringing up religion, frankly, we need to do a whole show on this, and I'm thinking I may do one next week or very soon, on Christians, on Christianity, on religion, on religious principles, because there are, you know, Jesus cared for poor people. I mean, you can't hide that from the New Testament.
Yeah.
He said it was easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. He looked out for lepers and prostitutes. his whole message was about caring for the poor. It was not about capital gains tax cuts. You just can't find that in the New Testament. And yet there are people that are playing the Christian card as much as, or more as they're playing the race card, pretending that the message of Christianity was about keeping out the poor. They're actually teaching exactly the opposite of the message of Jesus of Nazareth. And I think liberals have to reclaim the historical Jesus and the early message of Christianity, the original message, and use that as a weapon back at them. We shouldn't be afraid of using religious arguments. Sometimes they can help us.
Well, I agree with you, Mark, completely.
And
absolutely.
Another issue here at hand is this. I think sometimes the whole "I'm a Christian" thing in the Republican Party is another way of isolating us and them groups, because mm-hmm. let's face it, the base of the Republican Party is Southern Baptists.
That's
everybody
right.
in this country is not a Christian. People have different religions, and religions, most all religions, are based on charity towards the poor and those who need help.
And so, most religions don't honor that.
You're right. But the long and short of it is, I think that the party saying we're the party of Jesus is another way of saying, you know, we're, look at us, you know, white Baptist, Southerners, and everyone outside of our group, they're them, we're us, we got to stick together. But let's stick together with Charles. Charles, welcome to WPFW. I think Charles is there. Charles? Hopefully you still...
Charles? Hello?
Okay, we got Kalonji. Kalonji, if you're out there, and if you hung up, call back 202-588-0893. And if you're not Charles and you want to be a part of a dialogue, 202-588-0893. Kalonji.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
You know, if this whole thing wasn't so serious, it would be comical. Because I think people of any real consciousness have tried to reform this criminal system since its inception. And you can't reform it no more than you would allow a cold to bring you to pneumonia. This system is not going to allow anything that's done to reform it to change its main focus. What has to be done is to develop a different system, because everything in the system is corrupt. It's so closely interwoven that if you pick on one part, it will heal that part. You know, what has to be done is for some creative understanding of what human existence really is, and move in that direction and get rid of this criminal conspiracy corporate, I don't know what to call it. There's so many names, derogatory names I could think of to call it, because it is all of that. You know, there is nothing humane about it. Everything that's humane has happened in this country has been fought for by the people. You know, and it doesn't last long, because as soon as the system rights itself, boom, you're right back down again and start all over again. It has to be a whole new system.
Thank you. You make some great points there.
I'd like to respond if I could.
Okay.
I'm not as pessimistic as the caller is. I see everything he's talking about. I don't dismiss the corporatocracy that exists. Terry and Garland and I have always talked about public financing as one way out of it. But I'm not so pessimistic to think that it can't be changed. And I fear that pessimism, because that pessimism, to me, is what drives people not to vote,
right,
to stay out of the system, to basically not participate. There can be and has been good changes in America. Things like civil rights, yeah, they were hard fought for. Yeah, they were difficult to achieve, but they were achieved. And whether it's health care reform or getting rid of global warming or anything else that you care about, it's going to be a very, very hard-fought battle, but it's not unachievable. It is achievable within the current system.
But Charles does make a very good point, and I think it's worth considering in terms of changing the system. You know, what is lacking in America and lacking in American ideology is any sense of humility. And without that, which is a spiritual quality to begin with, without that, as soon as you do make some progress, the fact that this rampant individualism, this me before you theology begins to take over and begins to distort what has already been achieved. And I think there does need to be some kind of fundamental change, and maybe humility is the beginning of it, if we could ever get towards that.
Yeah. If you remember, we've got some callers. It looks like he's back. I think Charles is back. But we're going to go next. We got Charles. Okay, we're going to go next to Frank, and hopefully we'll get Charles on here sooner or later. Frank.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to WPFW.
Okay. We know that people like Glenn Beck use racism to divide and conquer us. But what about Van Jones? Was he just a random hit, or did the fact that he was pushing green jobs and alternative energy technology have anything to do with the fact that he was taken out?
Well, I would have to say this. Right now, I think the right is, you know, they're flinging everything and anything they can at Obama and the administration. And I think anyone they can find close to Obama, if they can dig up something on them that they can toss over there and attack them with, regardless, I think if it's the gardener at the White House, they'll go after him. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think that Van Jones actually probably should have resigned. So maybe I disagree with the caller. Not because of green jobs or anything like that, but because he stupidly signed a petition he hadn't read, which no one should ever do, and that the petition suggested some of the things that the truthers are saying, namely that George Bush planned 9/11 and things like that. As far as I'm concerned, the truthers on the left are like the birthers on the right. They believe these fantastical things, and they don't really help the situation. As far as I'm concerned, we have to distance ourselves from the crazies on the left as much as we ask the Republicans to distance themselves from the crazies on the right. Not that Van Jones is crazy or believes that stuff. I don't think he does. But I do think he signed a petition without reading it, and the petition believed that stuff.
Yeah, I think... Go ahead, Terry.
I just wanted to back up and make one correction. I just had credited some thoughts to Charles, and it was Kalonji who had the thoughts that I was responding to. I just wanted to make that correction so that our listeners know we do care and listen to what they're saying.
Okay, I think Mark does make a great point, though. You know, I love Van Jones and the things that he's done. It is a valid point that when you sign something, you have to read it, and if you sign put your name on something that is associated with a fringe group, it's possible it can come by to haunt you. And nobody had a gun to your head to sign it. So I don't want to see Van Jones.
Well, now at the average political rally, they probably
change that. But I don't want to see Van Jones. I think he was great, the best person for the job. But unfortunately, he made an error signing that document. Shouldn't have done it. And unfortunately, it came back to haunt him. Teresa, welcome to WPFW.
Hello. How are you?
Just wonderful.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm from a rural town in North Carolina, and I know you always, your topic is about racism toward the president.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to say what really has to happen is changing people's mindset. My little town in rural North Carolina, I was surprised that to see when it was the election time,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of the folks in my little town, even though they knew that President Obama was a good candidate, it's their upcoming. They just didn't want to have a black person as their leadership. So I really think we have to change the people mindset.
Very good.
How would you do that, Teresa?
Well,
it's really education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I think one of the things too that's been proven, and that is people seeing, just like President Obama being there, people seeing African Americans in positions of power, people seeing African Americans act in a way that blows the stereotype up, actually works to destroy a lot of stereotypes and change minds. Charles, are you there? I'm hoping he's here this time. Charles.
Yes.
We are having a time with Charles.
I think Charles has a bad phone. Sorry,
yeah.
Charles.
Charles, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to Nancy, too.
Hello.
Is this Charles?
Hey, yes, this is Charles.
We've been searching for you all night. Welcome to WPFW.
Yeah. Thank you.
So what's happening?
I have several comments about some of the things you guys have been talking about.
Okay, let's keep them so brief, because we've got some more callers we got to get to, and okay. We only got like 12 minutes left.
Foremost, I guess you guys mentioned about reading bills before people sign it. Well, how many people do you think read the Patriot Act or the stimulus package?
No, actually, just to correct you, that wasn't it. What we said was Van Jones signed... Van Jones had signed his name on a document that had to do with the 9/11 truth movement, and apparently he didn't read it, and it had some things on it that were so far out of the mainstream that they kind of came back to cause some problems. Speaking of things that cause problems, so it wasn't about bills. Charles, you still there?
No, he hung up. I think he hung up. That's why we had that dial tone there.
No, we're having a wonderful time here.
We are. We're having a great time,
and we're going to go to Nancy. Nancy,
we got a live phone line open.
Please hang up and try your call.
I think that's Charles's line. Let's hang up on Charles.
Do we have Nancy?
Nancy, don't go away. We're trying to get to you.
Hello. Okay. Well, we've got time. So Charles and Nancy call back. Charles got start.
Charles, I think, hung up because he wanted to make his point, which was exactly was not onto what we were dealing with.
Okay, well, then Nancy called back. 202-588-0893. We're kind of playing musical callers here. 202-588-0893. What?
Let's cut that line if we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got to make sure we don't have open phone lines. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So the issue of Van Jones is a very strong point, and that is, you know, I hate to say this, even a stop clock is right twice a day. Every now and then, when the Republicans make an attack, they're going to find something that they can say is a credible attack. Like I said, I'm a big Van Jones fan, and I think he was the best guy for the job. However, he made an error, and
That's part of our overall problem that leads to the racism too, which I'm pointing out, is we are so fractionalized, and media and everything else makes so much out of the fractionalization that, you know, it just leads to this divisiveness, and if somebody makes a foolish, stupid mistake, you know, their political career, no matter which side they're on, can be destroyed. And that's absurd. It's frankly absurd.
And realistically, if the best thing for America is that Van Jones holds that position,
yeah, exactly.
A stupid thing that he did years ago shouldn't disqualify him from the position. It's sad that we've gotten to the point that we're looking for ministers and people of perfection rather than the best person for the job. Dwayne, welcome to WPFW.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess I'll disqualify myself because I forgot to tie my shoelaces this morning.
There you go.
One other quick thing about mindset. You cannot listen, everybody. It is impossible to change a person's mindset and personal values unless you use shock therapy, which is illegal and primitive. However, you cannot legislate it. You cannot force it. All this political theater, this nonsense is sickening, and I'm about to just back off altogether. This country is near economic collapse. Never mind all this other nonsense. So when you start seeing bread lines and your children outside half naked in the winter, as you see in other parts of this world, I hope you'll wake up by then.
Well, I think, unfortunately, what he represents is something that we have and something that we've heard in some of our callers, a feeling of futility and powerlessness. People say the system's not going to work, everything's bad, and instead of fighting to get things done that we need to get done, fighting for health care, calling or doing something that if they believe in health care reform, doing something to try to help get it done, people start feeling that everything is futile and they just sit on their hands and they don't do anything anymore.
But one point is good. I mean, it is much more difficult for people to change their minds than we think and pretend it is. Simple education does not achieve that. There's a much more complex process, and I've done a fair amount of study of this. You know, I mean, you have to understand how hard it is to change people's minds, and therefore we have to approach it realistically. It's not impossible. I don't agree with them there, but it is difficult.
Let's go
Jerry, I do a lot of speaking to high school kids, and I find that I have some diehard conservatives. I can talk to them for an hour, and I do change their minds because a kid, 17, 18-year-old, I think probably to about 25, it's not even that hard to change your mind. They've only been taught one thing by their parents. That may be one reason why some parents were so fearful of President Obama talking to their kids today, because they fed them with so many lies that they're afraid that a slight bit of truth, they may realize, the president's human, he's not a demon. And then they might see that the whole thing is a lie.
It
is not that hard. It's much harder with adults.
Unfortunately, psychologically and sociologically, the studies do not bear that out. They will return to their basic views. I understand what you're saying, but it's much more difficult.
Well, let me say this. We're going to go to Gary, but let me say this. The worst thing a parent can do is tell a child, you can't do that, because I guarantee you one thing, the kid can't wait to find out what it is that the parent doesn't want them to do. Gary, we got time for two more calls, and Nancy is back. Hey. So, Gary, what's happening?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm really frustrated at the president and the Democratic Party. They need to move on from this bipartisan crap and move on and do what we worked for them to do and what they were put in the office to do.
Amen.
These same people were against Medicare. The same people, they used the same people, the same arguments, you know, years ago. Now you've got people who are talking about they don't want the government option, but don't mess with my Medicare. How stupid is that? Sometimes you just have to ram stuff down people's throats, even though they're you got to take them kicking and screaming sometimes.
A good point, and thank you for calling. We've got Nancy. We're going to get to her in 1 second. We got time for. Well, let's go. Let's go to Nancy. It looks like we only have time for one more caller. Nancy, welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to say that it's upsetting to hear people decide what Van Jones signed without actually reading it. He signed actually a very moderate petition. It asked questions like, why was there a stand down that day, and why was no one ever held responsible? And in fact, they received awards. So I just hope that people will back off, because he actually was signing and asking questions that every good American should ask.
Good point, and I would say this, callers out there and listeners, might be a good idea to go online. I'm sure if you search around and Google around a little bit, you can find exactly what it is that he signed, and it might be a good idea, because you might come up with something very valuable to call in. We are here. Mark Levine, Terry D. Kester, and the D is for?
Dr. Democracy.
And myself, Garland R. Nixon. I have to think what the R is for. I don't know. But at any rate, we're here every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. This is Dialogue on 89.3 WPFWFM. And Terry, how could they get in touch? How can our callers get in touch with you?
Well, first thing I just want to remind you, tomorrow is we have What's at Stake at 10 a.m. We have a fascinating show where first topic is unquenchable America's water crisis and what to do about it. And the second topic will be from two gentlemen, one from the Institute of Public Accuracy, two gentlemen who have just returned from Afghanistan, giving us an up-to-date report on that. And finally on the show, we will give you the speech that President Obama should give tomorrow to Congress. So those three things on What's at Stake at 10 a.m. Hope you'll be listening. Terry D. Kester, you can reach me at WPFW.org. You can go to Facebook. I hardly ever do, but you can go to Facebook and find me there as well. And you can always hear me right here with Mark and Garland.
Mark, where can you be found out there on the World Wide Web?
I can also be found on Facebook, MarkLevine. I can also be found at WPFW.org. And if you go to MarkLevineRadio.com, you will see a tremendous interview with Helen Thomas, Dean of the White House Press Corps. You won't want to miss that.
And my name is Garland Nixon. And you can Facebook me. It's GarlandNixon, Garland Nixon. If you're in Montgomery County, Channel 16, I have a TV show called The Edge with Garland Nixon. It's every Monday and Wednesday from 7 to 7:30 p.m. We're going to be... Yeah, I'm getting some clapping here going on. So check it out. I have a lot of good guests. We have a lot of fun. Basically the same kind of stuff. And believe it or not, we are arranging to have the three of us, the very raucous caucus, on TV. And what I'll do is after we have our little fun on TV, we'll get that up online and we'll give you.
And when this happens, Jay Leno's going to retire. Trust me, Jay Leno is going to retire.
Yes, and we've got T. Sturdivant, Jasmine Blackman. And we've got Cassandra. They are running the boards. They're running everything here. And they're doing a great job. And if not for them, we wouldn't be here. Oh, I better Amen. Not say that because I'm going to probably kidnap them next week so we can't be here.
Right. Don't say that.
And Mark's, let me just say this. If you, I've gone to Mark's site. And all jokes aside, it's great. Mark has some really, really good stuff on his. What is that? MarkLevineRadio.com?
Yeah, you can find it there. It's also RadioInsideScoop.com, but people forget that. So I just MarkLevineRadio.com. You'll get there as well.
And Mark has a TV show, and he's got his TV shows.
I do.
And also
it's
you can...
actually Monday nights at 7 p.m. It's seen throughout Northern Virginia. And in D.C., it's on Sundays and Thursdays. Check my website for details.
Excellent. Once again, you're listening to 89.3 WPFW-FM. My name's Garland Nixon, Terry Kester, Mark Levine. Terry D. Kester. Oh, I got a mean look for that. And Mark Levine, we will see you next Tuesday, Dialogue at 7 p.m.
A conversation in which we all get a chance to speak, to listen, to...